Welcome to the I Am Podcast, enrichment for the ears of those who are always learning. Brought to you by the Avon-Maitland District School Board.
Okay, so hello everyone. Welcome to another episode of the I Am Podcast. I'm here today with Constable Stanley from the OPP, and we are at Howick Central Public School, and he is talking about something that may seem kind of overwhelming for parents to stay on top of at first, but he really does a great job of breaking it down. So I'm going to pass it over to Constable Stanley, and he's going to quickly introduce what the topic is, and then we're going to get right into it.
Sure. So tonight I was at Howick Central Public School with the Huron OPP detachment, and we had a number of parents out this evening, and we were discussing internet safety for parents. So we have a wide range of parents with their knowledge base, some that are, you know, the internet's very unfamiliar for them, and we have others that have some certainly some knowledge. But tonight we shared with some tips on, you know, certainly things to keep their son and daughter from making those mistakes that us as police officers see on a fairly regular occurrence throughout the school year, where students are making basic, simple mistakes. One of those things that we like to remind our students is to always think before they post. And think is an acronym that means, is that message truthful before you send it out? Could that message be hurtful in any way? Is the message illegal in any way? And when it comes to illegal, it's sending inappropriate photos, nude photos, sending threatening messages, harassing messages. Those are the most common things that us as police officers find. The other, for the letter N, is it necessary? We tend to find students often overshare. And some of these things that they're sharing, it just will come back in some cases to haunt them when they're applying for jobs later on, or entrances into schools, or applying for scholarships. And that person that's reviewing their application sees a very inappropriate photo or a very immature photo. So it will come back to haunt them at some point in their future. And lastly, if the message is kind, then we certainly encourage all of our youth to share those kind messages. So that's one of the take-home messages for our parents. Certainly, always remind their student to think before they post. When it comes to their social media, it's sharing information that's appropriate, and really limiting, you know, the information, personal information that they're sharing. Definitely to check on their privacy settings, because they're always changing. To limit your audience and keep your accounts private, and really restrict who you share that information with. That is certainly a tip that all parents need to, you know, certainly check out with their sons and daughters, what they're doing online, be involved, be active, and really pay attention. We talked a little bit about some of the lingo and the acronyms and some of the emojis that youth are using now. We talked about vault apps and just some tips for parents to dig a little bit deeper and just be aware of what their sons and daughters are doing. Establishing rules and guidelines, coming up with a game plan, or some may say a contract. So what are the expectations when you're on the internet? And certainly, what are the consequences if you fail to abide by that contract? So just having that relationship with your son and daughter, that they're willing to communicate with you, and using the internet can be a fantastic experience. We need to all use it, and it can certainly enrich our lives. It can certainly bring entertainment and pleasure. It can make our lives more efficient, and not to be scared to use the internet and get your hands on and use that iPod and use that iPad and to go into different apps and learn about what your son and daughter is using. And I think you'll be much more informed, and you'll be set up for a much more fulfilling experience when you're using the internet.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Constable Stanley, for that, and I hope you guys enjoy the episode. It is very informative. Thanks.
So I am a constable with the Huron OPP detachment. My current role is I'm the community safety officer / media relations officer. Been in this role, I think, coming up on 5 years now, 5 or 6 years. I'm kind of losing track, actually. I quite enjoy it. I spent a lot of my time, actually, in the elementary schools. I was at, and I make kind of the rounds to all the schools that I can get into, and they're very receptive having police officers in the schools and teaching different programs. The one program that I teach, I spend a lot of time teaching, and I'm still currently trying to wrap up a few schools, is the kids program. Any parents familiar with the kids program? Any parents with children in grade 6 by chance? Yeah? At this school? At Howick? Okay, I taught your son or daughter the kids program at this school. And I probably have. In the past, we used to call it VIP program, Values, Influences, and Peers. Kids program got rebranded maybe 5 years ago. Now it's Knowledge, Issues, Decisions, and Supports. And it covers five different core areas, one being youth and the law. Lesson number two is on peer-to-peer relationships. So we can do an emphasis on bullying or an emphasis on dating relationships and respecting other people's boundaries and that kind of stuff and harassment. Lesson number three is internet safety. We get into topics like sexting, just being thinking before you post and that kind of stuff. And we're going to cover that tonight. Lesson four is on drug awareness, and lesson five is on mental health awareness. So I do spend a lot of time in really elementary schools, sometime in the high schools. We've delivered sexting presentations this year to all of the high schools, actually, within the county, with the exception, there's one high school we didn't make it to this year. And, you know, and sometimes in the elementary schools, like preschoolers, so I quite enjoy that. The other part of my job, the media relations, not so much. But if the phone rings, I may have to just take a pause to answer it because something big's going on in the county usually. So if anybody has any questions at any time, please raise your hand. I'll try to, some people, I don't know, just kind of gauge, like some people that are in the room probably know a lot more about computers and technology than I do and certain apps. And some parents in the room might be just scared to death of it. So I'll just kind of, you know, throw it out there. If you have any questions, please ask. And I'll try to explain the best I can. This came from a slide from one of my colleagues. She's actually a community safety officer up in Bruce Peninsula, and she was doing internet presentations to parents. And some parents might just feel overwhelmed with all these different apps that are out there, and they're changing like by the moment. But you know, the reality is, you know, you're here. That is a good sign because you're obviously involved in what's going on and with your child's life. And that's really, really so, so important. Before I came today, I was just talking to one of the detectives. He's like, oh, what do you got going on tonight? I said, oh, I got to go up to Howick for an internet safety presentation. He's just like, he goes, internet safety for the parents? He goes, it's too late. These parents, if the issues are going on, you just go up and tell the parents that just to do their job as a parent, then everything will be good. You know, to some degree, there's some truth in that statement. If parents were really monitoring what their son and daughter's doing, you know, we probably would see less problems. So I'm really glad that you're here. You're hopefully going to learn a few things, and maybe I'll learn some things from you guys as well. What is the internet? I'm going to skip this one. This is a video that I do play for, you know, some people really don't even have a concept on what the internet is. Like we're using on our daily lives, like, you know, whether for business applications, you know, for entertainment purposes, we're using the internet for so many things. But the reality is, it's just a vast, vast, vast computer network that's linking up all these other small computer networks. It's worldwide. Certainly the usage of the internet is growing and growing leaps and bounds. Very remote places in the world we can connect online. And I said I was going to Howick. They're like, they have the internet in Howick? I'm like, oh, yes, they do. And they're using the internet in Howick. But you're not that far remote up here. What is the internet? Communication system that connects computers and computer networks all over the world. No individual, company, or government controls the internet. I asked students. I said, who polices the internet? Grade 6 students. That's 11, 12-year-old students. And they'll, like, some of them have this belief that there is, like, the World Wide Web police. And they think that exists. Certainly, we all know that crimes are taking place online all the time. Our police services in wherever jurisdiction, wherever the offense is being committed, wherever the victim resides, they're going to be, you know, tasked with investigating that offense, whether it be a cyberbullying issue, whether it be a scam, whether it be you know, a sexting-related crime, child pornography. We know that those crimes are taking place all the time. So it's left up to the jurisdiction of that area. Certainly, I think as users of the internet, we all have a responsibility to be good digital citizens and to report offensive content, have it removed. Certainly, websites like, you know, YouTube, Facebook, you can report things to site administrators and you can have content removed if it goes against, like, the terms of agreement and use. But there's no individual that controls this, and there's no government agency that controls the internet. Just kind of a global digital snapshot. So in our world, this was in January. Of course, things, you know, there's more people in the world now than there was in January, but roughly we got about 7.5 billion people in the world. What percentage are using the internet? 50% of us in the world are. Unique mobile users, 66%. And you know, I was probably late in the game myself. And really, it's the only reason I probably carry a cell phone is because of my job and my role. I don't have one outside of my work phone. But I know youth, like how many like parents in here, your sons and daughters have smartphones, their own cell phone? And I asked grade six students this, and I probably, I would say nearly 50% of the kids do at the grade six level. And I asked, how many are paying the bills? Surprisingly, the last class I asked, some of the kids were actually paying the cell phone bills on that. So I was moderately surprised with that. I'm not going to come down on technology because technology is great and we need to use it and we need to embrace it and adjust to it and use it for all it's worth because it can certainly enrich our lives and make things more efficient. It's just certainly there's, you know, those mistakes people are making, not only youth but adults as well. So like I'll ask those grade six students how many have cell phones and a lot of them put their hands up. Then the kind of the follow-up question to that is, how many parents, when they gave you that phone or handed that phone down to you, or you know, when you got your first cell phone, established some rules? So that's very important. And we're going to get into that a little bit later. Annual growth, as you can see, internet users, year-over-year growth, like 10% growth. That's astronomical numbers. Active social media users, you know, increased 21%. Active mobile social users, a lot of people, that's where they're getting their information, is on their phone. Their Twitter feeds, their Instagram feeds, Facebook, it's all connected to their phones. When it comes to social media, here's, I guess, the number one platforms, Facebook. Like, I think they probably are at 2 billion users now. It was like 1.94 billion users as of a month ago. That's staggering numbers. Some of the other more popular ones, like WhatsApp, people that use YouTube, how many parents in here would have a son or daughter that has a YouTube channel? Anybody in here? You do? What kind of posts or videos do they upload? Or do they? And I've asked students this, and a lot of them just have it so they can subscribe to their friends' feeds, their friends' videos. Others, like my nephew, who is in actually grade six, he's got his YouTube channel and he does gaming videos. That seems to be really popular. Like he's playing video games and he's just talking as he's playing these games. It was kind of interesting. He got a day off school one day when he should have been in school, but for whatever reason, his behavior, his parents decided it would be as appropriate for him to miss an afternoon of school. So he was at home, thought it was really cool that he went on and started uploading videos onto his YouTube channel. He's like, hey, this is me, Max, and I got the day off school, and he's posting videos about this. Not wearing a shirt or nothing, didn't think nothing of it. My sister at work, she gets a hold of him. She's like, Max, cut it out, like this kind of thing. But it's interesting what youth will put on social media. It really, really is, and we'll get into some of the mistakes. Some of the other common ones we see on here, Instagram, Twitter, Skype. People are Skyping. What other ones? Some of the ones I asked the students right now recently, like Musical.ly is a big one. Snapchat is really, really popular. I have two kids, and I have a boy and a girl. My daughter is in kindergarten. My son is now in grade two. And kind of like my moment was when my son was, he wasn't even in school yet. And I came home for lunch, and I think he was 3 and a half going into school in the fall. And I came home for lunch and he's like, Dad, I made a video. We had an iPod. I'm like, uh-oh, let's see this video. I thought it'd be just something kind of cute. He's up in the bathroom with the camera on, and in his video, he's got it pointed at his penis, and he's on the toilet, and he's just going do-do-do-do-do-do-do, thinking nothing of it. Just a video that he filmed of himself. And at that moment, I said to my wife, okay, we need a password to protect this. Like, he was just playing around. He's figured out icons. He's already known how to go to certain icons so he can chat with his cousins. And this is all before the age of four. So, like, our children now are born into this digital age. This, you know, this is not new to them. It's not a foreign concept. And they're, some of them, I would say, masters of this technology. Like, they know it inside and out. But they haven't really acquired, in a lot of cases, the life skills and the experience and to recognize some of those dangers. That maturity just doesn't come until a little bit later in life. Us as parents, we're in the opposite end of the things in most cases. You know, we're not the experts when it comes to the apps and the actual using of the technology in most cases. Some of us are, not myself, but some are. But we've acquired some life skills. So I think really to have a good system in place at home is sharing this information between your son or daughter. You know, being involved with what's going on in their life is so, so critical. Like, what are young people doing in cyberspace? The same things adults are doing. Watching videos, Netflix, streaming messages, Snapchat, social media, gaming. It's amazing how much time students are spending screen time. You know, medical experts, I won't get into that, but, you know, limiting screen time, there's obviously health advantages to limiting that. Gaming, I'll ask students in grade 3, grade 4, grade 5, how many hours do you spend a day gaming? Some students would tell me they'll spend the entire day online gaming, the entire day if they could. I was teaching with some grade 3, 4 students, and one of the boys puts up his hand to tell me some of the rules in his house about, you know, online safety and that. And he's like, I just wait till my mom goes to bed and I stay up and I game until 2, 3 in the morning. This is through the week. And the teacher was looking at me doing this. And he comes to school just bag tired, like in no condition to learn. And it's an ongoing basis. So certainly video game addiction is certainly real. Choices for change. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but if you have a son or a daughter that's really, really, you know, it seems to be like they're online too much with gaming issues. Not only do they support people with, alcohol and drug addictions, but video gaming addictions. It was really interesting. I was talking to one of the, he was a younger male, and he is one of the counselors there. He had his own addiction issues, and that was one of the things that he really spoke about was his own gaming addiction and how prevalent it is in, adolescence today. So something to keep in mind, we do have resources in place for that right here in Huron County. Data facts, and this is a message that I always share with students, whether it be, you know, grade 4, grade 5, grade 6 students or high school students. They seem to forget that all this message that is always retrievable, it just doesn't disappear. We can retrieve it. Police, you know, we have an entire e-crime section based out of Orillia. And if we have to launch a police investigation where we need to get data off a computer or on a cell phone device, as long as we have judicial authorization, we'll seize it, and then we'll send it to Orillia, and then our e-crimes experts will extract that data, and will make copies for us for court purposes. That information can be traced, and it's retrievable. Paul Davis, he's an expert in computer tech security. He presented down in South Huron at their high school, and I was at their presentation before Christmas. And it was a really good presentation. He offers like an evening presentation for the parents, and really hard hitting, and is like, wake up, parents, this is information you need to know and understand. And he lays it all out there, and he said, make no mistake about it. He's been in this industry like over 25 years. He's presented to over 300,000 students, and that message is, it's all retrievable. And stuff like Snapchat. How many people are familiar with Snapchat? Over here? No? Some, a little bit. So Snapchat, basically, you send like images and short little texts. And the idea behind it is when you send the message that it's supposed to disappear, you can time set it, like 1 second, I think. What's the max? Is it 10 seconds? I think is it 10? A lot of people use it, like guys in that I play ball with, with some younger guys, they use Snapchat, and I'm like, these guys are in their mid-20s and stuff, but they're using it all the time. And so this message, people think it's gonna disappear, it's gone. He assured me, he goes, it's all retrievable. The only way you can actually get rid of data is if you physically destroy the hard drive. And of course we know people have made copies in many cases. How your information is traced through your IP address. So if you have like internet through, I don't know, in my case at home, let's say it's Eastlink. That's my cable provider, internet service provider. If there was something suspicious going on with my account, you know, it'd be simply finding out who my internet service provider is through your IP address. Police can get that IP address. It's
Once you have the IP address, then you can find out who the internet service provider is. Then we would basically we get authorization from the courts in the form of like a production order warrant. And then the telecommunication providers, they supply us with that information. We have good working relationships. We can retrieve that information we need in whatever type of case, whether it's a threat or that's child pornography that's being sent. It's all, of course, time, date stamped, and it's not going to go away. Yes?
Okay, I'm going to ask a dumb question.
That's okay.
So you said it can always be traced, right?
Yes. Yeah, well, like the SIM card and all that data on that, upgrading that, like I wouldn't trust it like to be rewritten over. I would take that out. I really would.
So when you turn it in, you need to
take
our SIM card?
I would.
Okay.
I would.
Because you don't necessarily
pay for it. Yeah, that kind of information, it's I wouldn't trust it. I really wouldn't. That, you know, even now a lot of our vehicles now, and I've seen a good show on like, I think it was CBC, and like a lot of our computers have like, it's computer hardware, and there's a lot of information contained in there, your GPS, coordinates, your past history, all that cookie stuff is stored somewhere. So reputable car dealers, I mean, you know, you trade in your vehicle, they're supposed to go through these protocols and eliminate all that stuff, but do they? Is it something they forget to do on occasion? Possibly. There's a lot of data there. And Paul actually talked about that in his presentation. It's amazing how much data that we're leaving, these cookie crumbs and trails, pieces of data everywhere we go, especially on your on smartphones. I mean, there's so much information there. When you check into addresses, you're just leaving these trails where you go, your location services. What risks are out there? Many, many different risks. Certainly for youth, viewing inappropriate material, and make no mistake about it, youth are viewing inappropriate material. Whether it be sex-related, graphic imagery, violence, drug-related stuff, they're viewing it. Sometimes because they're seeking it out and they want to know about it and they're curious. Other times it's because they've clicked onto a link. Maybe they searched a word and you know spelled very closely to another word and up pops this in the search engine and then the youth clicks on that. Now they're exposed to something. That does happen. In many cases, though, youth are simply, they're curious. Their friends are talking about it. They want to learn more about it, so they start searching. So, you know, as parents, keep that in mind, looking at search history. That's a good, you know, a good thing to be doing. Don't just trust that your son or daughter is not looking at it, because they probably, chances are, they could be. Take a look at their internet search history and their browser history on a fairly regular basis, just to make sure. Yeah, I'm seeing your body language at the front. It's kind of like, uh-oh. But that's the reality.
Sorry.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Yeah, like your search engines. So I don't know, do you use like a Mac or like like the internet browsing? Maybe the, we're going to show later? Awesome. That's perfect. That's really good to look at that kind of stuff. Some other issues out there, you know, certainly harassment, cyberbullying. I think we're getting much better at identifying that. The schools are doing a fantastic job, but it still exists. From my perspective, we're not seeing as many investigations when it comes to cyberbullying. At least that's what I see. And that I can speak to Huron County, because I do read the occurrences and the reports. They happen, no doubt about it. Are there times when it's not reported when it should have been? Absolutely. Losing touch with the real world, that's that, you know, that addiction, you know, gaming, social media, that kind of stuff. I mean, so often you see people that, you know, you go in public restaurants and people are just on their phones. No one's actually having face-to-face communication. It's really sad. It really, really is. Hate crimes, threats, luring, sexual assaults, all kinds of risks out there. And not only for adults, but youth. You know, this is like a slide, and it's not for shock value, but the reality is, you know, some youth and adults, when they're communicating online, they're too trusting. They believe that who they're talking to is exactly who they say they are. Youth make it. Grade 6 students make this mistake. Seniors who I was talking today, when it comes to romance scammers, they exist. There's people that prey on this. You know, the vulnerabilities of people. and you see a profile and it looks like, you know, someone they might be interested in dating. They're on a dating website, or they meet somebody in a chat room. This person says they're 12 or 13 or 15 or 16 or 17. They say they're successful, they're athletic, and everything else. But they're none of that. In some cases, they're child predators. There's a statistic just recently released that the FBI estimates that at any given point, there's 750,000 child predators out there in the cyber world. 750,000 child predators. You know, we live in a really safe area. Huron County is safe. Ontario as a whole is very safe. But there are evil people out there. There really are. And we have to, you know, take those precautions, you know, be there with our youth. And that's why our OPP, we really do try to educate our youth as much as possible so they don't make some of these mistakes. When it comes to friends, and I know I'm bouncing around a little bit here, how many youth and, like, parents of youth in the room have children that have Facebook accounts? One, two. Instagram accounts? That's more popular with the younger group for sure. Facebook, Twitter accounts. So when it comes to, like, Facebook, I'm sure a lot of adults in here have Facebook. What is the age that you're supposed to be to open up a Facebook account? It's 13. Yeah, 13 is the age. Students in grade 3 and grade 4 have Facebook in some cases. So you have to put in an age when you create this profile. It obviously puts you over 13. If you're not over 13, you can't open the account. So somebody lies to Facebook. They put in a fictitious age. If you put in an age that puts you over 18, then Facebook, then their default setting is public. So different levels of privacy. So any type of social media, you should be checking your privacy settings on a regular basis because they sometimes change them up. When it comes to Facebook, that's the only social media that I have. I know how the other ones work. My privacy setting is set at friends only. So quite simply, if somebody sends me a friend request, I can accept that person as a friend, or I can just let it sit there and never respond to it, or I can decline it. And I accept people that are truly people that I would share information with. People that are friends or, you know, I know aren't harmful to me. There are students that I've asked every class, every time I'm on this lesson about internet safety, I said, how many friends would one of you have here on Facebook? How many students have like 200 friends? Lots of hands go up. Some students have over 500-600 friends at the grade 6 level. So that's really concerning to me. And if I had a son or a daughter on social media and they had that many friends or followers on Instagram, I'd be taking a real close look at that, the friends list. Go through the list of friends, and they need to defriend some of these people. They need to unfollow some of these people. That must, that is absolutely critical. Look at the privacy settings. So when it comes to Facebook, you can have a public account. That means anybody in the world can read your information in your Facebook profile. I'm personally not comfortable with that. I'm not gonna live my life publicly out, you know, on Facebook. You can have friends of friends. That's another setting. If you have 100 friends and each of them have 100 friends, we got 10,000 people now viewing and exchanging information. That's not very public. Set it at friends only and really restrict who your friends are to actual true friends. And that should be like one of the take-home messages when you go home, you chat with your son, your daughter about this. Take a look at the friends list. See who's on there. You'd be surprised, some of the contacts. There'd be like known criminals in your town. There'll be adults that you don't even know who they are. You know, simple acquaintances. You know, people like high school students, that kind of stuff. And, you know, in some cases, yeah, it might be appropriate, that kind of thing. But in a lot of cases, you know, they need to defriend those people. Average number of friends per Facebook user is 130. How many students attend Howick School? Like, what's the student population? It's a bigger school. 340. It's a pretty big school, right? But for some students, there's no doubt in my mind, there'd be students in this school that would have in excess of 340 friends. And that's a real concern. Take a look at the friends list. Take a look at the privacy settings. When it comes to Instagram, you can have a private account or a public account. Make sure it's on private. Things like Musical.ly and these other social media apps, make sure it's at private. That way you choose who your friends are and who's following you. You have some controls in place. If it's left public, anybody can see that. When it comes to establishing your profiles in the first place, really limit the amount of information you put out there. Your name, it doesn't have to be your actual name. You can put like a nickname or something else. Some of my colleagues, they'll just reverse the letters in their last name, this kind of thing. I mean, I put my own name. I'm not too worried about that. But I only post appropriate things within my profile, and I really, really limit the information I put in there. People can put in whether in a relationship or not, what school they attend, where they work, what's their cell number, musical interests, hockey teams, all the sporting activities. There's all kinds of information you can load your profile up with. Some people are okay with that, perfectly fine with it. But for youth, I would have concerns if my son or daughter had laid all that information out there and certainly left your privacy settings open. Keeping in mind how many child predators are out there in this world that can use that information, potentially use it to target where your son, your daughter lives, and potentially do harm to them. Just real quickly, different social networking sites, they're changing all the time. Facebook, Kick Messenger, Twitter, Instagram, like Periscope, Snapchat. OPP, we use Twitter. We have, I think for West Region, we have like 25,000 followers follow our OPP Twitter account. We're trying to get a local account. They'll give us a gun. They'll allow us to drive a cruiser, all this stuff. They won't give us a Facebook account. It's really interesting. Our Twitter account is managed by one person out of West Region. His name's Dave Rector. If we want to share information, like, I don't know, Huron County Torch Run, you know, we get a photo and a little clip, I can send it to him and he'll post that for us. If we have a wanted person in this area, I can share information with him. He'll post it for us. He has control over it, one person only. Obviously the OPP is concerned about our image and our brand, and we want controls in place. Just like in your household, there should be controls in place. Because no doubt if we allowed each and every individual officer to have an OPP Twitter account, it would be a disaster. It really would. There'd be mistakes being made all the time. Some of those mistakes could be really harmful to our image, and we don't want to do that. OPP, for instance, and how I think parents need to understand how quickly things can go viral. This is a public safety message that we took of a photo of a car in Brussels. In the wintertime, you might have seen the image. This car is just driving down the road, all kinds of snow on it. And one of our sergeants stops the vehicle. It's a senior driver. He's going to pick up his mail on the main street. So our officer gives him a ticket. It was really nice to the guy. Gives him a ticket, though. Cleans off his windshield, sends him on his way. Took a photo of that and sent it to me. And I'm like, okay, this would be a good safety message. I send it to Dave Rector, our community service coordinator. He puts a caption out there on Twitter, and it said, this is just a public safety message. Please remove all snow and ice before you drive on the road. Seriously, look at this. And there's a picture. You know, when we send out messages, you really want to get the pictures. People see the pictures. That is what people want to see on Twitter, just these quick bits of information, rather than reading all this text. So the photo, like, it's right there. It's pretty obvious. And that message got sent out on our Twitter feed. In a matter of 48 hours, we had 250,000 people view that message, unique viewers. And those viewers, I was the media contact on it. I fielded media inquiries afterwards for probably 2 weeks steady of emails coming in. Some of these, like, hate mails, like, people are like, oh, look at the OPP, way to go, charge this guy, you must feel really good about yourself, or, you know, way to go, this guy is probably needs, should have been taken to a hospital, this kind of stuff. Two other people are applauding it. And we never mentioned this person's name. It wasn't done to embarrass him as a public safety message. But the reach was all over, North America, parts of Europe as well. Things spread really quickly. That's just a picture of a car with some snow on it. So, you know, other images that are shared by youth and adults, it's far-reaching. And the damage is so much more than, like, a rumor when we all went to high school. you know, those rumors, you know, they would travel within the walls of the school classroom, maybe throughout the school. Now youth post that message. In a matter of seconds, thousands of people are reading that message within the school, outside the school, within the school community, all over the place, and it's shared repeatedly. So things spread so much quicker, and the damage is so much more. Social sites explained. I seen that slide, and I'm like, oh, that does kind of sum it up. So Facebook, it's like, I like donuts, this kind of stuff. Twitter, I'm currently eating a donut. Instagram, here's a photo of my donut. LinkedIn, my skills include donut eating. So a lot of people are sharing information, you know, their resumes on LinkedIn and that kind of stuff, which is good. Like, technology can be great, no doubt about it. Some different icons you'll see up there, things your son or daughter are probably using, like Vines, just little videos, Instagram, and I don't use a lot of them, but I talk to the kids that do. Instagram seems to be very, very popular right now, Snapchat as well. You know, certainly it should be a shared interactive experience, and it can be a, you know, something very positive in your household, but, you know, having that communication, I mean, that's the first step, you know, that your son or daughter will come to you if there's an issue, if they run into a problem online, if there's somebody that, if they go to a webpage that makes them feel uncomfortable, that they'll talk to you about that. If their friend requested from somebody they're not sure to whether accept or not, it's great if they would come to you for advice. Mom or dad, what do you think about this? I've met this person in a chat room. I think they're really cool. They want to meet up with me. And they come to you and they ask. That would be awesome. But the reality is, I know in a lot of households, the son, the daughter will not go to mom and dad. But try to keep the lines of communication open so, you know, they will hopefully come to you. You know, speaking about that, when it comes to meeting people in real life in chat rooms, you know, the message that I give to the students is you're putting yourself in a dangerous position, a risky position. Don't do it. Who you're talking to online, whether it be in a multiplayer video game or in a chat room or a website that's specifically set up to meet strangers, such as Omegle. Has anybody in here heard of that? So Omegle, you know, I think their slogan is talk to strangers. And I was in an elementary school and I've been in a few this year, and students will say, I'll ask them, I said, have you ever been in a chat room? And for them, the word chat room, like, what do you mean a chat room? I said, oh, a place where you go and you talk to strangers online. They said, oh, like Omegle? I was like, whoa, okay. This is like a grade 6 student that's telling me that. Omegle, and I went on to that site when, our community safety officers, we went to Aurelia, and there's a 1-week course, is about internet threats and sexual exploitation. So we had some people from our e-crime section come down and they talked to us. These are some sites that are concerning. Omegle is one of them. You go to this site, you can chat with people, but usually that conversation within a matter of minutes turns very sexual, an exchanging of pics. So if you see that in your browser history and your son or daughter's computer, that would be concerning to me, because the content that they're going to see in there is not appropriate for someone, you know, elementary age student. Chatting with strangers online, never share personal information. This goes for adults, goes for youth. Exchange of personal information would consist of like your home address, where you go to school, bank account information, credit card numbers, all that stuff. Never share that information. If someone wants to meet with you in real life, they never should do that. If they are convinced that this person's someone they really want to meet up with, they should not be going unsupervised. Does a mom or dad go with them, set up a meet in a public place to meet this person? They're simply strangers until verified. So I wouldn't allow my son or daughter go to do that. I've talked to teens though, and they do it all the time. They take a chance. And a lot, you know, it usually works out that they're not at risk, but there are those cases out there where they've met somebody online, there is now an opportunity where they meet, this person could cause harm to them. We have places throughout Ontario where the OPP has purchased like buildings to set up these meets, and they're wired up with cameras, and these child predators come and they meet with people. And our officers are there, obviously, and we make arrest. they showed us on part of this course, we have OPP officers, their job is online undercover investigators. So they create these profiles, they go into these sites like chat rooms and different sites, and they pretend to be like a 14 or 15 year old. These strangers will be chatting with our officers, and they'll ask, how old are you? What's your sex? What's your location? So ASL, that's very common lingo. They want to know your age, your sex, your location. So the officer says something like, I'm 14, I go to school in Barrie, I'm in the cafeteria on a spare, this kind of thing. So they put it out there that they're a minor, and this person will respond back, oh yeah, I'm so-and-so, I kind of live in the area. And usually within, it doesn't take long, the conversation kind of goes to, oh yeah, so what are you doing right now? Can you send me any photos of yourself? And then the officers will groom that and they'll see where this person will take it. And then eventually they'll ask for pictures of a minor underage naked photos. Now we have criminal offenses being committed. So that happens out there. So chatting with strangers, not a good idea. And that goes for multiplayer games, video games. And kids will do it. My nephews have done it and they'll be playing video games. The conversation is many times inappropriate. The language is offensive, talking about alcohol and that kind of stuff. Stick to the gaming strategy, simply what's going on in the game. But talking about personal information, not a good idea. That's the kind of the website. That's their logo, their Omegle. Talk to strangers. I mean, that's what it is, and it's not a place I'd want my 11-year-old or 12-year-old boy or daughter to go to. Cell phones, kids are getting them at a young age. Average age is 9 years of age. Rules in place, so establishing rules. There is a handout that I left with you there. Just having rules in place. You are the parents. You got to set the limits, the controls. That comes from you. Having those rules in place is very, very important. Can you take your technology into your bedroom at night? A lot of kids will use it as their alarm clock, but it's not in bedside mode. A text comes in, they're checking their phone. I ask them, they tell me. That's gonna be disruptive to anybody's sleep cycles. What are your limits? 2 hours of screen time, is it 3 hours? Is it 1 hour? Who can they communicate with? There's so many different rules, but you establish them. Sit down with your son and daughter, go through some rules, come up with, I think the handout I provided there is called the game plan, or come up with a contract, whatever you want to call it, but lay out the expectations. These are the limits, and the consequences are, if you break these rules, you don't follow the game plan, then, this will be some of the discipline. Just knowing your lingo is important. Like, youth are communicating in short forms, right? So knowing some of the lingo, you can find, there's like manuals on this stuff, like page after page of short terms. Here are some of the common ones. So a lot of people have seen LOL, laughing out loud. GAS, got a second. Can anybody ask what this one stands for? That one's let's meet in real life. Okay, let's meet in real life. How about this one? That's naked in front of camera. So speaking of cameras, just because I don't want to forget about this. When it comes to webcams, external cams, even built-in webcams, when not in use, cover them up. So that could mean a sticky note on it. Paul Davis, that computer expert, he suggests putting a Band-Aid over it. So just when it's not in use, people can remotely hack into your system and then they can power up your computer. They could be secretly watching you as you disrobe to, go in the shower or you're changing clothes. Have we had any reports in Huron County of that? Not my time here, but our computer experts, they say share that information. So there's people that can do it. And apparently it's not very hard. There's people in my office that have some really, that are computer kind of techs, and they say it's not hard to do at all. So cover up your webcams from not in place. What about this one? MOS, any ideas? Mum over shoulder. PAW, parents are watching. P911, that's kind of like parent alert. I don't want to talk about that right now. Mom, dad's in the room. 420, that's kind of like in the drug subculture. So people that use marijuana, I think it was in California, they would meet after school. At the time of day, it was 420. So, and actually the day of April the 20th has significance in the drug subculture. So if you see your son or daughter is referring to 420 or that kind of stuff, that's a sign they might be, you know, using marijuana or experimenting with it. Banana, just another word for penis. SGMT, what is this one now? Silently giggling, I think. Yeah, I forget this one now. 511, TMI, too much information. 143, that means I love you. I love you. Now they're into emojis. Anybody guess what the taco refers to? Female anatomy, I'll leave it at that. And this is commonplace, like high school students, probably elementary students. Peach, that's your butt. Penis, eggplant, penetration, that kind of stuff. You see those kind of symbols, they're exchanging that kind of talk. Now you have some more information. When you maybe do inspections on, I hope you would look at your son or daughter's like cell phones if they have them. Check them out. What's on their homepage? That'll be quite telling what icons they have on there. Their most popular things, the things they're checking out most often will probably be on their homepage. Take a look at that kind of stuff. Is it TSN? Is it the Weather Network? Or is it like dating websites like Tinder and Bumble and other different things? Look at that kind of stuff. See where they're going. And don't just trust it. When you see the icon, you think, oh, that's just the calculator symbol. How many people are familiar with like vault apps? Hidden vault apps? No. There's a good handout in there. That's from Paul himself. It explains what vault apps are. Basically, and lots of high school students have them. Lots. And it's just a way to keep things secret from adults. When they do these inspections on phones, whether it be police or whether it be mom or dad, and they keep those files that, you know, maybe naked pictures, other photos that mom, they don't want mom or dad to see. You think it's the calculator tool icon, but if you click into it, there's a vault app and it'll lead you to the secret path where all these files are stored. Some of these vault apps have password protection on it. Some of them are quite elaborate where your son or daughter will show you in there and it will take you to the safe spot on the app. But there's another way you can go if you put in a different password. It will take you, you know, so read up on them. It's kind of interesting. Very, very popular in, you know, certainly the high school age level. Targeting youth online, adults online, certainly can easily be done. Identifiers, that kind of stuff. Be careful what you're posting in social media. Really limit, you know, obviously, your privacy settings and your audience. Uploading photos. Your photos contain a lot of information. There's a lot of, your location is built into photos. Like if the photo's taken on a relatively new computer, it's uploaded, it'll tell you precisely where that photo was taken. Like within like a meter of where that photo was taken. So when people upload this stuff to the internet, you just advertise your location. There's lots of web applications out there that they're designed to scour social media. And you can actually put like a radius, put a circle on a map, and it'll tell you who's posting from Twitter and different social media apps like Instagram. And it'll tell you where it was posted from. So you can see it. I've checked them out myself. There's lots of them out there. Some of the more advanced ones, you got to pay a subscription fee for them. But there are free ones out there. We'll give you some basic information where these people are uploading photos from. Some different crimes, certainly unauthorized access, hacking, mischief to data. The main common ones that we see youth making mistakes on, threatening, criminal harassment, child pornography. Threatening and harassment, probably number one. Youth are just not thinking before they post. And, you know, they're having a bad day at school, they go home at lunch and they put something on Ask.fm or some other social media app, like, I might as well come back and shoot up the school. That's very concerning. Other people that are posting pictures holding up airsoft rifles that look like assault rifles. You cannot tell the difference with captions like, better not come to school tomorrow. Like, these things are happening on a somewhat frequent basis. Just not thinking before you post. Like, obviously people are going to see this. teachers, staff, people in the community. It creates a lot of anxiety in schools when people say concerning things like that. And it will be reported to police. We will investigate. And in, sometimes we will have to lay charges. Sexting, briefly, for those that don't know, might be an unfamiliar term. Simply, it's exchanging explicit sexual photos and videos. And peers do that. It's actually, the OPP wanted to try to get away from calling it sexting to self-peer exploitation. Most people know it as, sexting, receiving and sharing of these photos. The message certainly is, the crimes are being committed. You take a photo of yourself, if you're under the age of 18, of your private region, exposed, that you've created child pornography. If you send it to somebody, you've distributed child pornography. If you have a collection of these photos of your classmates, your peers, you're in possession of child pornography. If you're in a relationship with somebody, this applies to any age. We'll say you're an adult. You take naked pictures of yourself, you send it to your partner, and then your partner shares it without your consent, that's a criminal offense. That's fairly new. Over the last 2 years, that law came out. So sharing intimate photos without consent is a criminal offense, a separate offense. Adults do it, youth do it. Like I said earlier, then Paul, he spoke to over 350,000 students. His kind of assessment of the situation is he would estimate 30 to 40% of youth have engaged in that type of behavior, that activity, sending, sharing explicit photos. The message is quite simple, don't get caught up in that, do not do it. Certainly the legal consequences. I know locally, our Crown Attorney, she's like, we need to start charging more people. Maybe it has a deterrent effect. Maybe it's going to make a difference. And we have charged some people this year with that particular offense, high school students. But I think more importantly, it's the mental health concerns. The victim, they share that photo with their boyfriend, let's say. There's a good chance that boyfriend is going to share it to some of his friends. And they're going to share it to other people. So it's going to spread. And at some point, that victim will realize that. They're going to now come to school. All kinds of people are going to be talking about it. They're going to be calling that person all kinds of horrible names, cruel names. They may not want to come to school. Their attendance may go down. They might start using drugs or alcohol. It's just the list goes on and on. Might get to a point where they're so depressed, their self-esteem has gone down so much, they become suicidal. We've seen that in elementary schools with students that are dealing with, cyberbullying issues where, they've made some mistakes, but the damage is so much, it's to the point where some youth have killed themselves over this. And that's obviously the worst case situation. So, and many times kids get caught up in it, they're not thinking before they post. And that's a message that I always reinforce with, whether it be grade 6 students, grade 3 students, or high school students, is before you send any message, is it true? Is it hurtful in any way? Is it illegal? Is that message even necessary? People overshare. They put too much information out there. It's not necessary. The OPP, for instance, part of our background checks when we hire new recruits, they do a very thorough background investigation, which includes what you're putting out there in social media. And they have a form, they'll give it to a new recruit, and they'll ask for your consent to go into your social media accounts to see what you're posting. Because a lot of people have the private accounts. The OPP will say, all right, well, let's see what you got in your account. And they see, on occasion, candidates that have in great physical shape, pass all the aptitude tests, and they have really good references, they get to that stage, and we say, sorry, you're not going to be hired because you're posting illegal, photos of you drunk, intoxicated, sometimes using illegal substances, you're making racist jokes, sexist comments, mean things, that kind of stuff. Or their associates and their connections to people on their friends list are just undesirable people, like criminals. So, that a lot of people make that mistake. All kinds of employers are checking social media. Schools, admittances, they're going to be checking that out. So, and whether it be my buddy runs an auto body shop, it's the first thing he does, checks out social media. What can I find out about this person once he reviews the resumes? So that will affect your future, certainly if you're posting inappropriate things online. It's interesting, the OPP says, we do have concerns, though, if this candidate doesn't have any social media. They're like, are they hiding something? Why don't they have Facebook? Why don't they have Twitter? Why don't they have Instagram? So I don't know what the answer to that is, but certainly if you have it, post appropriate things. You know, a true reflection of yourself and the person you want to be in your community. And if you're going to post otherwise, there will be consequences. Lastly, is the message kind? If so, please do post, share kind things. In one of the videos we showed to the students is, like, what would your grandma say about this before you sent that message? If they're over your shoulder, what would your mom, your dad say about this? What would your teacher say about this? Would they approve of this message that you're about to send? So just everybody needs to think, pause before they respond. Protecting your computer, this kind of stuff, antivirus software, firewall, we'll skip that. The resources, the ones that I would recommend would be commonsensemedia.org. That's a really good one. And another one is needhelpnow.ca. That one, they will kind of walk you through it. If you make some mistakes, you put something out there and you want to kind of limit the damage, limit the, you know, how far, but that's, it's really difficult to do. That's a good help. Needhelpnow.ca is a good one to check out. That's what I have for you. I don't know, I kind of went a full hour there, and I'm sure you have some awesome information to share too, so.